I call this meeting of the Committee on Housing Finance and Policy to order. Let it be noted that we have quorum. Well, welcome today, members. First order of business, let's get into approval of the minutes. Can I have a motion for approval of the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I was here yesterday, so I can move the minutes from Tuesday, March 4th, 2025.
Representative Nash moves the minutes. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. All right, so our first bill on the agenda today was going to be House File 1343, but I don't think the bill author is here yet, but I do see the other bill author. So if Representative Neuer, if you are willing, we'll start with your bill today. I move that House File, I got to make sure I say this right here because they're both very similar numbers, 1334 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Neuer, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to present this bill.
Yeah.
This bill is iteration of the work that we did in 2021. I don't know for many of you if you recall, in my district there was a fire in a high-rise building, which we lost five people on the same day. Another person passed away later, so six people lost their lives. The fire station that responded was less than even 5 minutes away. That was a tragic incident that happened on the 14th floor in Cedar High Rise Building. From that time on, we took the initiative to address life-saving effort by requiring high-rise buildings to be retrofitted with sprinklers. We gave the timeline to 2033 for all high-rise buildings that are 75 feet high, that is where the ladder for any fire truck can go to be retrofitted. We also subsequently provided funding for $10 million. And quite frankly, this is in response to the report that was issued by the state fire marshal. The state fire marshal indicated and reported that if that building had a fire sprinkler, those lives would have been saved. Unfortunately, we lost loved ones. We lost people who will not be back. And now that I'm saying that, I wanted to recognize Minneapolis Public Housing. They retrofitted all their 42 high-rise buildings with zero funding from us. They got some support from the federal government and the city of Minneapolis. They did what was required to be done. With also the $10 million, we have seen the successful installation or retrofitting of sprinklers in sewer towers, which I encourage members to go see the work that was done with minimum disruption within budget, which was what we appropriated last session. So this bill is requesting another $10 million, but with some few adjustments. The first adjustment is to change how we look at the 75 feet high. What we found out is some of the buildings, which are seven stories high, are less than that 75 feet by 2 feet, so we excluded them. So this bill makes that adjustment. The second part is changing the AMI, which is 50% to 60% AMI, so we can catch so many buildings throughout the state. Quite frankly, both in Metro and Greater Minnesota. So this is an opportunity for us to continue to provide life-saving resources to affordable housing, high-rise building throughout the state. So I ask for your support. Mr. Chair, I've got several testifiers on this bill, if you'll allow me to bring them up.
Thank you, Representative Neuer. Yeah, we'll move right into testifiers. I think first on our list here today is Patrick Hamlin.
Yourself for the record.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Chair, members of the Housing and Finance Policy Committee, and allowing me to testify here today. My name is Patrick Hamlin. I'm the mayor of the city of Hopkins. I'd like to also thank Representative Neuer Chair Igo and Representative Howard for carrying this important legislation, which expands this necessary grant program to help keep residents of public housing and property safe. This issue has been on my mind, as my staff at the City of Hopkins can speak to, for the last few years. It really keeps me up at night in terms of the safety of the residents at one of our larger buildings in Hopkins, Dow Towers. In 2024, our community applied for a high-rise sprinkler grant program that was denied. It was denied because the building was deemed just 3 feet too short. Communities like Hopkins and communities around the state of Minnesota deeply care about the safety of our residents. But small housing and redevelopment authorities like ours face incredible challenges trying to save for large sprinkler system investments like in Dow Towers. So Dow Towers is a 76-unit, seven-story building which serves residents at the lowest income levels, 30% AMI or less, $26,000 a year or less. Many of our residents who live in our buildings are elderly, with over 78% of the residents in that building having a disability. We have 10 residents who currently use an electric wheelchair and two who are completely bedridden. In a fire, crews would need to locate and physically evacuate these residents, which costs time, which could cost lives. This endangers our firefighters and residents, while our deputy chief is here today. Deputy Chief Wenshaw is here today to speak to more specifically to the challenges that the firefighters face in this building. I want to say that we're deeply concerned about finding funding for fire suppression for this building and for the people in this building, of course. As a small community with a small tax base, finding nearly $2 million it would take to sprinkle this building is a challenge. Additionally, HUD limitations on how HRAs can save and spend money make it impossible for us to save the reserve necessary for this project. This is why programs like the high-rise sprinkler grant program are so important. They are vital. It allows the HRA to use money that is saved and to be able to sprinkle this building. Buildings like Dow Towers it's one of the tallest buildings in our community at 72 feet tall and cannot qualify for this program the way it's laid out at the current moment. There's a whole range of people in life phases trying to get on their feet in this building and in Hopkins and in many cities around Minnesota. We embrace people from all mixes of incomes and backgrounds. What I like to call real communities with no gates across cities like ours are real communities. And the residents at Dow Towers face financial hardships, and we as a city face financial hardships. And this building is really a regional asset. It's a state asset. We take this property into our community and we own it. And so, resources like this are incredibly important for our community to make this, to make an investment like this possible and for the safety of the residents at this building. Again, thank you to Chair Igo, Lead Howard for your time today. And thank you so much for bringing this really important legislation forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Hanlon.
Thanks.
Next on the list will be Mike Wenshaw. Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the House, the Housing Finance and Policy Committee, for allowing me to testify today. I'm Deputy Fire Chief Mike Wenshaw of the Hopkins Fire Department. Many thanks to the Representative Knorr, Chair Igo, and Representative Howard for pursuing changes to this important legislation. The Hopkins Fire Department has worked alongside our HRA team over the past year on seeking funding for Dow Towers, and we're deeply disappointed when our building fell just short of the statutory requirements, making it ineligible for this grant. Current statute for this program requires that the building must be 75 feet to be considered a high rise, which leaves out many buildings like Dow Towers that are incredibly difficult to serve in an event of a fire. The Hopkins Fire Department has a ladder truck, which is 107 feet long and reaches about a five-story building. This truck is the longest ladder in the Southwest Metro. We have a couple other ones that are similar. If there's a fire on story six or seven, we'll be unable to reach it with any of our fire vehicles. And our only option is to have firefighters enter the building with apartment bundles and hook up to the fire department riser in the stairway. This creates a delayed response where firefighters are using stairways to both evacuate disabled residents and fight the fire, while other residents may be also evacuating using the stairs. Evacuation in a building like Dow Towers, where many of the residents are physically and mentally disabled, creates a unique challenge where residents may struggle to understand fire alarms or be completely unable to evacuate due to physical limitations. This requires firefighters to both physically evacuate residents while suppressing an active fire. Affordable housing like Dow Towers is deeply necessary in our region, and our residents cannot afford to be displaced by the effects of fire damage, nor could we imagine the devastation if we were to completely lose these deeply affordable units to a fire. We know that fire sprinklers are the best first line of defense in fire emergencies, controlling or extinguishing fires before firefighters arrive. They significantly reduce fire damage, saving lives and property. Fire sprinkler systems reduce fire-related deaths by 87% in homes with sprinklers compared to those without. The current code uses square footage rather than height as the determining factor for whether a building must be equipped with a sprinkler system. However, a building's height alone does not always indicate whether residents will be safer or if the fire department will have an advantage in fighting a fire. Changes to this legislation, which would allow our HRA to receive funding, is integral to keeping our residents and our firefighters safe. Again, thank you, Chair Igo, Lead Howard, for your time today. I'm available for questions if you have any at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Chief Wenshaw. I think we'll follow up with questions at the end of the testimony if we have any. Thank you. Next on the list will be Dan Kitzberger. Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Dan Kitzberger. I'm the Legislative Director at Minnesota Housing. And I just wanted to say thank you to Representative Knorr for carrying this bill, and also to our partners for helping sort through the language. I would just say from the agency's perspective, it's pretty rare to have a program that's undersubscribed. And so when we saw the drop-off of the initial attendance of the informational webinar that we do that had a little over 30 interested parties in the program, and then the volume of applications we actually ended up receiving and were able to move forward into scoring. We thought perhaps something was up with the language, and so that's where we had the opportunity to work with folks to get that sorted out. And so I think we're gonna be able to cast a little bit wider net this next time around, and so we're looking forward to that. And I would just note too that the language provisions in this bill will be moving as part of the governor's recommendations for the agency and our policy provisions, and so hopefully increases the chance that this is gets across the finish line this year and we can get another RFP out quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Kitzberger.
Thank you.
Next on the list will be Tom Brace. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tom Brace. I'm the state coordinator of the Minnesota chapter of the National Fire Sprinkler Association. I'm also the longest serving former Minnesota State Fire Marshal. I'm here in strong support of House File 1334, chief authored by Representative Knorr. This bill would dedicate funding and expand the grant criteria to assist residential high-rises install and use sprinklers. The revised criteria is critical to the successful retrofitting of our residential high-rise building in Minnesota. I personally spoke to disappointed individuals when they learned that they didn't meet the criteria. In one instance, the building was just 2 feet short of the current 75-foot criteria. 2 feet. We also recommend using the federal government definition on affordable housing, again increasing eligible buildings, as well as ensuring that potential eligible tax credit properties won't run into issues with the IRS rules about grants. If you remember one thing, fire sprinklers buy time, and time buys life. Fire sprinklers rapidly contain fire by activating immediately when they detect heat, not smoke, allowing them to control a fire before it spreads to other floors or areas. Fire sprinklers quickly suppress a fire, providing occupants with valuable time to safely exit the building. Fire sprinklers reduce damage because with early fire suppression, it limits the extent of fire damage to the building and its contents. Also, fire sprinklers help with accessibility challenges for both firefighters and residents. In high-rise buildings, reaching a fire with traditional firefighting methods can be difficult, making sprinklers even more critical. Due to the potential for rapid fire spread in tall buildings, fire sprinklers are considered a vital life safety measure. Thank you for your consideration of this vital life-saving legislation. I will turn to my colleague for some important information on residential high-rise building research, and that would be Mr. Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Brace. And Tim Butler, please introduce yourself to the committee for the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Tim Butler. I'm the retired fire chief from the city of St. Paul, and I'm a regional manager with the National Fire Sprinkler Association. After the November 2019 fire at 630 Cedar Avenue in Minneapolis, the one that killed five people, the Minnesota legislature, led by Representative Mohammed Noor and our late Senator Kerry Dietzick, began to address the issue of older high-rise buildings that were not equipped with fire sprinklers. The question arose of how many unsprinkled high-rise buildings do we have in the state of Minnesota? The League of Minnesota Cities, the State Fire Marshal Division, and the National Fire Sprinkler Association began a multi-year project to answer that question. I was one of the principal authors of that statewide survey, and I'm proud to report to you that the state of Minnesota is now one of the few states in the nation with a complete inventory of high-rise buildings. The survey found 624 high-rise buildings in our state. 569 of those are fully sprinkled, and those numbers include Seward Tower West in Minneapolis and Seward Tower East. The Seward Tower East building, the sprinkler installation is nearly complete. Both of those were recipients of the current high-rise sprinkler system grant program. There are 10 unsprinkled residential high-rises in the state. Two of those are public housing high-rises located in Hopkins and North Mankato. Six of them would meet the lowered height requirements of House File 1334, one in Albert Lea, four in Hopkins, and one in North Mankato. 25 of the state's high-rise buildings are only partially sprinkled. Three of those are public housing buildings located in Albert Lea, Hutchinson, and Pipestone. Five of those would meet the lowered height requirements in House File 1334, one each in Richfield, Duluth, St. Paul, Hutchinson, and Stillwater. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of House File 1334. I urge your support of this bill, and I stand ready to answer your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Butler. Next on the list will be Craig Bistoto. Did I get that right?
Really close.
Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chairman and committee members. My name is Craig Bistadu. I am a business representative of Sprinkler Fitters Local 417. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House File 1334. In buildings without fire protection, both occupants and first responders face a severe disadvantage when a fire occurs. Fire sprinklers not only save lives, but also protect property. I am a Minnesota certified journeyman sprinkler fitter with over 35 years of experience in the trade. Over the past 4 years, I have seen numerous unsprinkled residential high-rises and low-rises in Minneapolis become fully protected with fire sprinkler systems. However, the job is not done yet. House File 1334 presents an opportunity to prevent future loss of life by ensuring that every residential high-rise in Minnesota is equipped with fire sprinklers. Many such buildings across the state still lack this life-saving technology. By amending the language to the current bill allows for broader accessibility and securing an additional $10 million in funding, we can extend fire protection to even more residents living in unprotected high-rise buildings. Sprinkler Fitters Local 417 represents 400 skilled professionals who install, maintain, and inspect these critical systems. Not only do we work in the fire protection industry, but we are also strong advocates for fire safety. We firmly believe in the life-saving power of automatic fire sprinkler systems and strongly support House File 1334. Lawn sprinklers save your grass. Fire sprinklers save your assets. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bistadu. Next will be Brian Tyner. Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is Brian Tyner, Fire Chief of the Minneapolis Fire Department. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee for allowing me to speak today. I'm here to testify in support of House File 1334, the high-rise sprinkler system grant program. I had the honor of testifying when this bill was originally being debated and passed, and I'm thankful for the honor to be able to testify again. Decades of data and even my 30 years of experience in the fire service have proven that fire sprinkler systems save lives. No person, to my knowledge, has ever suffered a fire fatality in a fully sprinklered building that was not intimate with the source of the fire. And this is due to fire sprinklers' ability to control the fire in its smaller stages. And while the MPHA has been able to retrofit all of their residential high-rise buildings, and I'm very proud of that in the city of Minneapolis, there's still a need to provide those same retrofits to other residential high-rises and even those that are just a bit under 75 feet. And so with that, I humbly ask for your support for House File 1334. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Tyner. All right, is there any members from the public that wish to testify? With that, we'll go into member discussion. First on this will be Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Neuer, I remember we talked about this when you first brought it, and maybe if you have one testifier that can speak to the cost of doing this retrofit would be handy, because my question is this, as maybe somebody comes to the testifier's table. I see you looking over trying to pick one. But
I'm phoning a friend.
Yeah. So it's a potential $10 million one-time appropriation with a $2 million individual grant where they have to provide up to a 50% match. My question is this: what does $3 million get you if you're going to do a building? How much does that actually cost to do in the building? And is $3 million going to get the job done? Because, I work with me, this is 2 years ago we did this. Mm-hmm. Are they doing this during a reconstruction of the building, or are they doing this in a retrofit while people are still in place? So those are my questions, and I fully support sprinkling. I was taught by someone who is very near and dear to me the value of sprinkling. There she is over there. My wife, the engineer. So that's my question is what does this get for an individual building that might be the recipient of one of these grants?
Representative Neuer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may begin, and hopefully someone will be coming up to speak on the fire sprinklers that we installed in sewer towers. What I can tell you is there was no displacement of the residents at all. It was more of a seamless process. They installed the sprinklers, retrofitted just recently. And to my knowledge, I think the cost, because of the amount that we give them, it's a 25 high-rise building with several units, and the amount that they got was less than $2 million for that building. But I'll let my one of the testifiers to come and speak to that.
And Mr. Chair, I can rephrase the question if the testifier needs me to.
Mr. Butler.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, Tim Butler from the National Fire Sprinkler Association. To use the Seward Towers for an example, they got a $3.3 million grant. They had a local match of $800,000, so roughly $4 million to do two buildings. Those two buildings are 22 stories tall. The first story on each one of those was already sprinkled, as you'll see some of those partially sprinkled buildings. So 21 floors of residential units in each one of those buildings, totaling 640 units. That's 640 families protected for $4 million. It comes out to roughly $3 a square foot.
Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. That was the crux of the question, because I wanted to see if this tranche of money that we bring forward, how many buildings would that likely get us, and what does it cost to do the per square foot? And if it's being done during a complete renovation, that's one different cost as opposed to doing it while people are in place and you have to meet with their schedules and you have to be able to do a lot of other things like clean up their apartment or clean up their space. Just trying to make sure that we're not appropriating money for something that actually isn't going to impart benefit if the grant is indeed granted. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any follow-up, Representative Neuer?
I think, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Mr. Butler explained it all. And I think there wasn't any cost in terms of movement. They had to schedule the time that the resident was there. They just moved the items on one side, and the installation was just quick and thanks to the professionals who do this work.
Next on the list, we have Vice Chair Dotsoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, my question just got answered, so thank you.
There we go. Next will be then Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Question I had is, builds a little bit on Representative Nash's question, is how many buildings could use this? And so are we talking where we have $10 million this time, in a couple of years we're going to need another $10 million, and I'm not arguing against the program at all, I'm just trying to forecast a little bit. Is this going to be something that we're going to be talking about for years and years and years and years? Thank you.
Representative Neuer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you received the list of the areas where we need to sprinkle. About 10 you've had from Mr. Butler. And I think that gives us a rough estimate of how many high-rise buildings need to be retrofitted. Last session, I think we requested a report to be sent to the fire marshal. As part of that, collecting the report, now we have got the data. Having that data, I think the $10 million may be sufficient to allow us to be able to provide the grant or the loan program because of the requirement I've had for some of those buildings. As you can see, we changed grants and also added loans to the process. I'm assuming, based on the numbers and the number of units, that $10 million may be sufficient at this time.
Any follow-up, Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you.
Any further discussion, members? Lee Howard.
Representative Neuer, just would thank you for bringing this bill forward. It was one of the, I think, important bills that we passed funding for in our last budget, and it's good to hear the work that's being done before it, and this is a common sense reform to make sure we're meeting the fullest need and the impact of what we passed in our budget in the previous cycle. Thanks.
I'll reiterate from my colleague there in Lee Howard, happy to sign on to the bill and support this and reasonable change so we can keep doing good things. And with that, any closing comments to your bill, Representative Neuer?
Thank you so much. I appreciate your support. I look forward to working with you all to make sure that this goes to the finish line. Thank you.
With that, House File, again, keeps messing me up here. 1334 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you. And now next on the list is House File 1343. I believe Representative Zalesnikar is here. I move that House File 1343 be considered for potential addition and laid over in committee. So with that, Representative Lesnikar, I believe before we get started, you had a verbal amendment we need to talk about today first before we go to your bill. Is that correct?
Yes, Chair Igo, and I will have nonpartisan staff walk us through that amendment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment that Representative Zalesnikar and I discussed would be on page 1, line 13, delete and AARP Minnesota and insert or organizations that advocate for seniors. And that would change, the effect of that would be changing the entities that MHFA could partner with in implementing this program.
Thank you. Is there any discussion to the author's amendment? All those in favor of adopting the author's amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Zalesnikar, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair and members. This is a different format. This bill, I am calling it the Minnesota NICE Home Share Pilot Program for Seniors. And it would be a pilot project to start in 3 counties. And the idea came from a bipartisan conference that I went to in Women in Government with senators and House legislators that were looking at best practices across the country. There are 32 out of 50 states that do this model. And it seemed really innovative and something that we should be talking about in Minnesota and have a conversation about because we have a very aging population and our goal is to have them age at home. And we know that we have 40% increase in mental health. We have seniors that have income gap limitations. They are on a fixed income with Social Security. They have increased medical needs, increased property tax needs, food needs. And loneliness and isolation are also a big factor. So what this does is it appropriates money for a pilot program in 3 counties. I picked St. Louis County is the largest county in the state. And Lake County is a county in greater Minnesota. And also Washington County is a suburb. And it represents 2 of the members that attended this Women in Government to try a pilot project. It's being carried in the Senate by Senator Housley, and this allows people to partner together. There's many variables that can happen, but we have Arrowhead Agency on Agency on Aging for Minnesota, and we have phenomenal programs happening, and this is just an opportunity to look at this, to create a system and a platform. Many of you saw the Golden Girls years ago and thought, wow, that's kind of fun. They're really having a good time together, and this program that has a home sharing platform has a method that criminal background checks and does matches, and so it can become intergenerational partnerships for students going to school that need a rent base that's between, you know, typically $500 to $800 a month that's affordable housing. And it also tends to be all different scenarios. It can be somebody that's been widowed, went through a divorce. The senior gets to pick the type of scenario they're looking for. Sometimes they look for having a lower, they give a lower rent because the person's going to shovel their driveway or their sidewalk on a day like today, or maybe they want to mow the lawn. They love outdoor time, and so they work out partnerships. So members, that is House File 1343, trying to find innovative solutions for a big deal called housing.
Thank you, Representative Zalesnikar. I think we'll go right into testimony then. So I believe the first on the list will be Rebecca Sash, and they are remote. Go ahead with your testimony. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Sash. I'm the director of the Arrowhead Area Agency on Aging, which is the division of the Arrowhead Regional Development Commission. We serve the 7 counties of northeastern Minnesota. In partnership with public and private organizations, we help older adults age successfully by building community capacity, maximizing service effectiveness, and linking people with information. I'm here to speak today on issues that older adults face in regards to housing in Minnesota, and also provide some information on home sharing programs such as the one proposed in this bill. As we all know, housing is a critical issue facing many Minnesotans, and home sharing models offer a promising solution to support older adults, both in rural and urban communities, while also addressing broader housing needs. Greater Minnesota is facing a housing crisis, particularly in rural counties like Lake and St. Louis County, where demand for affordable homes far exceeds the supply. Older adults, many of whom want to age in place, are increasingly unable to. Approximately 80% of older adults in all of Minnesota own their homes, which could be a good support for aging in place. However, the cost of maintenance, upkeep, and necessary modifications has become unaffordable. With the average annual Social Security payment for older adults in Minnesota being just under $22,000 annually, and housing costs averaging anywhere from $10,500 annually for rural areas and $18,500 for metro areas, many older adults are left with little to cover essential needs like groceries, medication, and also those in-home services that could help them avoid admittance to an assisted living or skilled nursing facility. These financial strains are compounded by rising property taxes and maintenance costs and are making it very difficult for people to remain in their homes. Additionally, the lack of workforce housing in many areas is another significant issue. As local workers in essential sectors, so teachers, nurses, police officers, struggle to find affordable housing. Home sharing programs have addressed these challenges by matching older adults with renters in need of affordable and available housing. These programs create a win-win solution by providing affordable housing for both older adults and workers, fostering those intergenerational connections and supporting communities. Furthermore, home sharing programs have shown proven success in other areas across the country. Similar programs have been implemented with tremendous impact in places like Arizona, Colorado, Pennsylvania. These are low-cost, high-impact ways to provide long-term, safe, and stable housing for older adults. Not only does this help to address housing shortages, but it also combats social isolation, an issue that we all know many older adults face. In a recent analysis of these types of home sharing programs, the majority of home providers aged 55 and older expressed an increased sense of well-being resulting from companionship, reduced loneliness, and a better quality of life. Several older adults also cited experiencing improved well-being in terms of improved sleep, reduced anxiety, and increased motivation to engage in activities, and even leaving the house more often. Home sharing can reduce feelings of loneliness, foster new relationships, and ensure seniors have the support they need to stay in their homes longer. Furthermore, the majority of home providers spoke in the value of receiving help with tasks of daily living, such as cleaning, cooking, shopping, gardening, as well as with housekeeping activities, for which some providers expressed functional limitations, such as mobility issues for things like carrying in grocery bags. I wanted to end by sharing a personal story from one of our senior linkage line resource coordinators. Resource coordinators are human service professionals who help older adults remain in their homes or return to their home after a stay at a nursing home or hospital. Resource coordinators provide in-depth support, connect people with services in their community, and follow up for long-term success. So this story is about Jimmy. Jimmy lives with his grandfather in the home that his grandfather grew up in. When he started a serious relationship with his current girlfriend, they decided to stay in Jimmy's home and share expenses with the grandfather. They have been able to save money to finance their dream home in the future while maintaining a good relationship with the grandfather and helping him remain in his home and assist with anything he might need. His wife had recently passed, and there was concern about him being left alone and what his options were for housing. He was able to stay put, save his retirement money, yet still help with household expenses, and in return, he has family that are with him to support him socially and financially. The home is a gathering place for the whole family as well, and extended family come to visit and help each other as needed. This is an example of an intergenerational family, but we believe that with the right program, we can foster these same kind of relationships, mutually beneficial relationships for people in need. So in conclusion, home sharing programs address the immediate need for affordable housing in many areas and have shown to be a sustainable model for the future. Home sharing could be a practical, compassionate, and impactful solution to the housing challenges faced by older adults and communities in Minnesota. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Sash. Next on the list will be Christy Kane, who I believe is also virtual. Please introduce yourself for the record, and you can continue with testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Eichel and members of the committee. My name is Christy Kane. I'm the Executive Director for the Arrowhead Regional Development Commission, ARDC. We serve the seven counties in northwest Minnesota, and we're officed in Duluth. I'm joining you today from Grand Rapids, Minnesota. I'm here to speak in support of the Minnesota Nice Home Share Pilot Program as outlined in the proposed bill, House File 1343. And I'm going to apologize up front as my testimony has a good amount of numbers in it. So please bear with me. In Minnesota in 2024, the average Social Security benefit, as Rebecca noted, was just under $2,000 per month, $1,808 to be exact. Those numbers are substantially lower in Northeast Minnesota, specifically for women. In 2024, AARP survey noted that one in five Americans ages 50 and over have no retirement savings, and over half worry that they'll not have enough savings to last in retirement. More than one-third or 37% are worried about covering basic expenses such as food and housing. According to the 2025 Minnesota State Housing Profile Report, affordable housing is defined as housing that costs a resident no more than 30% of their household income. So by my calculations, for the average single person on Social Security in Minnesota, a budget for rent and associated costs should be $542.49 per month. We keep talking about building more affordable housing, and we need it. But in the meantime, we also need to look at other solutions and other options. So I wanted to give a quick profile of a small town in northeastern Minnesota as it relates to home sharing. We're going to learn a bit about Virginia, Minnesota, located in St. Louis County with a population of roughly 8,400 people. In 2021, they completed a comprehensive housing demand or needs analysis done by housingadvisors.com. At that time, the largest gap prevalent in HCA's research was the extreme lack of housing for active seniors. The community needs new up-to-date housing for all ages, but the aging population is a key indicator in this. In Virginia, 22% of the population are seniors, so about 1,848 people. 44% of those seniors living in Virginia live alone, and they could greatly benefit from home sharing for many of the reasons that were previously mentioned. The owner-occupied housing rate in Virginia, Minnesota was 53.9% compared to all of St. Louis County at 71.3%. 58% of the seniors in Virginia are homeowners. 7% of Virginia senior households have an annual income of less than $10,000 per year, and 43% less than $20,000 per year. So 50% under $20,000 per year. The average Social Security income in Virginia is $15,943 per year, and that's equivalent to $1,329 a month. And these are household incomes. So that's $479 less than the state average. But the median household income for a senior in Virginia is $23,740 or $1,978 per month. 72% of these seniors living alone in Virginia are female. So keep in mind the numbers that I already shared, that budgeted expenses for rent should be no more than 30% of your income, and the average Social Security in Minnesota is $1,808 per month and $1,329 per month in Virginia. If Social Security were their only income, then an affordable amount of rent would be $399 per month. But we know that some senior households have additional income, and in Virginia, that brings the affordable amount up to $596 per month. At the time of the study by Housing Advisors, the average cost for a two-bedroom apartment in Virginia was $840 per month. So there's a $244 gap, even for those households with additional income in Virginia. So opening up homes to home sharing can help fill the social need and the economic need of aging community members throughout rural Minnesota and throughout all of Minnesota. The problems in housing development in rural northeast Minnesota are very complex. Much of the land is publicly held and can't be developed. Much of the land is tied up in brownfields. There are very few incentives for developers to build in northeast Minnesota. And while we are working to tackle these big issues, we need some low-hanging fruit to sustain the housing needs in these towns. These are towns that offer aging community members a safe and affordable place to live in the community of their choice. Home sharing offers the additional benefits of socialization, maintenance sharing, and stronger response networks if there should be an emergency. Housing is a critical issue facing many Minnesotans, and there's more than one solution needed. This bill offers a promising solution to support some older adults in both rural and urban communities while exploring other critical housing issues. So I hope you'll give this pilot some consideration, and thank you for listening to my testimony today. Thank you for Representative Zalesnikar for introducing this, and please feel free to reach out to me regarding information relevant to Northeast Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kane. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify? Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Igo and committee members. My name is Thomas Elnis, and I'm the State Advocacy Director with AARP Minnesota on behalf of our more than 620,000 members statewide. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you to Representative Zalesnikar for her leadership in this space, offering the amendment, and your leadership on housing impacting older Minnesotans, Chair Igo, too. AARP Minnesota believes people of all ages and ability levels need safe, decent, and affordable housing that will enable them to continue living safely in their homes and communities as they get older, regardless of the size of the community that they live in. That's why we support this bill as amended, as one of the many ideas needed to address affordable housing options in Minnesota. This pilot could prove to be a worthwhile investment in improving housing affordability for older Minnesotans, and if proven successful, could potentially be considered for a statewide impact. Appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Elnis. All right, that concludes testimony. Is there any questions from members of the committee? Representative Mamanya Hiltzi.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you so much, Representative, for being here. Good to see you again. I am loving this bill from the perspective of cultural aspect. I come from a culture where communal living is a thing, where it's celebrated. And especially having the opportunity to take care of my grandmother until she passed away in our family home that I grew up in Brooklyn Center. And so I appreciate this idea of, you know, addressing, I think one of the testifiers talked about low-hanging fruit to this housing issue that we have. And so I just have one question around the line 1.18, the protect the private information and data hosts of hosts and renters. Coming from a data privacy background, I'm wondering, how do you see that play out? I'm just curious to know, how do we plan on protecting that data?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you. That's a great question. excuse me. I think, you know, I've looked at Arizona, and that's something that would be in phase one of looking at the best methods for that. And, you know, this is Colorado's axe, but these states have address that in their model to make sure that data protection is part of that. And so in phase one study, that would be the initiative, is to have the agency determine the best method that we would choose for Minnesota.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Chair. And thank you again for this bill. I hope that the pilot goes really well, because I think this would be something that will definitely help not only the three counties. I was hoping that my county was a part of that, but that's all right. That would be really helpful for our elderly population. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Zalesnikar. It's definitely a very interesting idea, so I think that's kind of cool. A couple clarifying questions I had. In the bill language, it says the renters could be any adult, but it sounds like from the testimony and from your intent, you mean it to be seniors to seniors. Is that the case, or would other adults be able to rent from seniors?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that question. In different aspects, that's been different scenarios. So the agency, when they do partnerships, they go by the first, the profile of the homeowner, what they're looking for. And so in some scenarios, in some states, they've had college students, they've had people that are taking a job in a community, an intergenerational thing, and somebody else, it's really individual driven. So somebody else might want somebody that's the same age as them, or they want to have, or they're open to, they don't care about that. Some have pets, some don't have pets. They have a whole inventory of questionnaires that they go through to do matching in the best way.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for that. Yeah, I think that sounds like a really interesting program, so it would be cool to figure out where you guys sort of end up landing on that, or if you keep it open. And then I didn't hear this, but I guess with the $150,000 that's appropriated, is that only towards administering the program, or is that also to support rent payments for the renters to seniors?
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question. That is not to support the rent portion. That is just the phase one of the installation of it, of getting this up and running as a pilot. It's been, many of other counties have asked me about it, so they're finding out that this is working in other states. So to your points, I'd love to start on a pilot to get things right, and then we could look at rolling it through. And I have fiscal staff here to address the fiscal note and other concerns. Thanks.
Okay.
Representative Igbaje.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's helpful if that's for administrating the program. I guess then I would be interested in understanding where you think the rent line would fall then for the people who would be renting, and kind of does, I imagine that might change on location, but if there is a standardization that you're looking at to make sure that the rent is actually affordable for the renters.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question. It tends to be right around, when I'm looking at the country, around in states that would be similar to Minnesota, in greater Minnesota, suburbs, and then metro, $500 to $800 a month. And then depending on amenities or situations, it could be more, but it's been really a phenomenal thing to see as truly affordable for people.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Igbaje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lizenkar, for answering my questions. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's definitely an interesting idea. Would kind of love to see how it continues to play out and the work that you keep doing on the bill. I think, as we've talked about in this committee, I think all ideas are kind of on the table. So appreciate you bringing it forward.
Any further questions, members of the committee? Lead Howard.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Zalesnikar. Just piggybacking off Representative Igbaje's comments, I think anything in the housing realm that sort of tries to think outside the box is so important. And so I just appreciate that you're doing that with this bill. And it's exactly what we need to be doing, because the status quo isn't getting the job done. So I just appreciate you bringing the bill forward.
All right, seeing no further discussion, I'll just make closing comments as well. Thank you, Representative Zalesnikar, for bringing this bill forward. Again, thinking outside the box, but also, I mean, bringing something forward that has a fiscal note of $150,000. I mean, props with everything going on that you're able to do that, and with your testifiers today, find a way you could do a lot of good with very little money. So just hats off to you for that. Looking forward to see what this bill can do. And to you, Representative Zalesnikar, for your closing comments.
Thank you, Chair and members. I'm just excited. Thank you for the opportunity to present the bill. We need some solutions. Minnesotans we have a tremendously aging population that is concerning, and we need to create intergenerational programming. I agree, creating community in our homes is important, and many people have family that live all over the United States, including me. So having opportunities that create family for people that may look different than it did 100 years ago or 50 years ago, but I think this is a start. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Zalesnikar. With that, House File 1343 will be laid over for possible inclusion. All right, members, that concludes our agenda for the day. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, March 11th. Thank you, all members, for being here. With that, we are adjourned.